morning and welcome into the show. It is Daniel Ortman coming to you live from the Dream Imagine 8 Sports Studios. 8 a.m. on the East Coast, 5 a.m. out west. And boy, is it a bad morning at U.S. Soccer House. Particularly a bad morning for Greg Berhalter. What a joke. The U.S. men's national team had not lost to Canada in 34 years. Went up to Toronto to play Canada in the CONCACAF Nations League and lost 2-0, and it wasn't even close. It was horrible. Embarrassing. Pathetic. I could keep running with words, but they'd all be negative, except for Canada, who showed up to play, played with an identity, played with a style, played with a passion, played with a purpose. Canada knew how they wanted to play, and by far looked like the better team, by far looked like the nation that had a better idea of who they are and what their program is about. What a joke. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Pathetic performance last night from this U.S. men's national team. It is time again. I mean, this is almost 2 years to the day that the U.S. men's national team lost away to Trinidad and Tobago, failed to qualify for the 2018 World Cup. This is in October of 2017. And we are 2 years later and nowhere nearer answers, solutions, ideas, confidence. And anyone that is saying, well, look, Berhalter's not been on the job very long, you got to give him time, that's the Federation's fault. They wasted a year after the debacle in Trinidad by having an interim manager, a caretaker manager for a year, because they were already going to hire Greg Berhalter. They just wanted to wait a year to do it. So they wait a year, they waste a year, bring him in, thinking, hey, this is a year removed. We've got somebody in between the failure as a buffer, Dave Sarakin. We've got somebody in between that debacle in Trinidad. And then we get to a place where we hire Greg Berhalter. Everyone knew it was the worst kept secret in global soccer. Everyone knew that this was a cherry picked hire, that the hiring process was a sham. It was all to give cover to hire Jay Berhalter's brother, the COO of U.S. soccer. They hire him, he gets in charge. He claims he's got a style. He claims he's got a way that he wants them to play. He claims that he's got all these ideas. Every time we watch this U.S. national team play, this men's national team play, what about their performances are giving you any confidence that we have a sense of purpose and direction, that there's progress being made? This is a clown show. It is a joke. And no offense to our brothers and sisters to the north, but if we look this bad to Canada, my gosh, we are so far off global standards. We wouldn't know what they were because they're so far out of reach that we can't even get sight of what excellence looks like. Unreal. as a federation, the leadership, leadership in name only, where are you today? Where are you demanding excellence? Addressing the fans, saying this is not good enough. Things have to change. They have to get better. Personally, I think that Greg Berhalter has shown he is not up for the job. He's had enough time to at least show that the program is heading in the right direction. It's not happening. The players don't play for him. His player selections, who he's bringing in, don't make sense. The team on the field has no sense of identity. There is no passion. These are like zombie performances. So I think Greg needs to go, and I think all of those who hired him need to go. Because it's not just about Greg. It's the process and the people involved in the process. In the run-up to the 2018 election, there were a lot of candidates talking about the need to get the right people making the decisions within U.S. soccer. And there was this big pitch made, well, we'll get the soccer people. We'll get the soccer people. We'll take care of that. But, you know, we got to keep growing this from a financial standpoint. We need the right financial leaders in charge. We can hire soccer people. Really? Really? Prove it. Because it hasn't happened so far. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. I cannot get over the fact 34 years. And you could tell from the first whistle, kickoff, I mean, from the very beginning of the match, Canada came to play. They had a sense of purpose. They were coming at the U.S., and the U.S. could not get on the ball. They couldn't even get possession. Unreal. A few days ago, this story, this interview came out with Des McAleenan. Who is he? Des used to work for the Federation. He was a coach with Tab Ramos. He had some interesting things to say as well. Unbelievable assertions from Des when talking about the hiring of Greg Berhalter. He was with our squad this summer playing in the U-20 with Tab Ramos, with the U-20 squad playing in the U-20 World Cup. And here's what he had to say about the hiring of Greg Berhalter. He said, "I owe enormous gratitude to Tab Ramos, and he should have gotten the senior job. He had four successive World Cup qualifications. We went to the quarterfinals of two of them. It was a fit up. The guy who runs U.S. soccer, Jay Berhalter, who is really in charge and who pulls the strings, his brother, Greg, became the coach. They never conducted a search. They just said they did." Now, this is just an allegation. This is an offhand remark. But it's not shocking. Is it so hard to believe? I don't think so. If you look at the way the process was handled, is it really that surprising? I don't think so. If we look at the performances of our U.S. men's national team, leading up to the failure in Trinidad, the year after Trinidad, and in this last year since Greg Berhalter's been hired, is there anything going on that's surprising? No, not really. Why should we be shocked? We shouldn't be. We are getting exactly what we deserve. There is such a level of incompetence on the footballing side of the Federation at the top, and we are paying for it on the field. Accountability is required. Leadership is required, and we are not getting it. Unreal. Such an awful performance last night. And if you don't think that we are in trouble when it comes to the qualifications for 2022, if we don't get this changed between now and qualifications, we're going to be on the outside again, looking in, wishing we were at another World Cup, because we are going to miss out. And the only reason that we would have any confidence that we're going to make the World Cup 2026 is because we're hosting. So we get an automatic berth. This is ridiculous. Unreal. Completely unnecessary in a region of CONCACAF to have these kind of troubles. You don't understand how bad it is. We should not even be concerned ever at qualifying out of this region. Ever. I mean, it should be like, you know, ho-hum, boring old U.S. qualifying for another World Cup. No problems. And that all of our challenges are, you know, in the World Cup itself. That should be the minimum baseline of where we should be. And we're nowhere near that. Nowhere near that. Unbelievable. Our sponsor this half hour is DuckTick Brand, DUKTIG brand.com. They are the maker of very, very helpful resources for coaches, for players, etc. And if you haven't checked them out yet, check them out at DuckTickBrand.com. And you'll be thanking me when you do. Use promo code DWSHOW and you will get 10% off of your next order. DWSHOW to get 10% off of your next order. We'll be right back after this. welcome back into the show. We are excited to be joined by Craig Beebe. He is the president of Livonia City FC and marketing director for the NPSL. Craig, welcome to the show. How are you today?
Doing well. Thanks for having me on.
Well, thanks for joining us. We are excited to kind of get into something that that we saw online, and that was some conversation surrounding Michigan and in the state of Michigan when it comes to soccer and especially non-league, etc. But before we get into that, give us a little bit of background about you and, you know, how did you fall in love with the sport in the first place? And then what kind of led you to get involved and do Livonia City FC?
Yeah, so I've played the sport my whole life. I grew up actually playing for my youth club called Livonia City Soccer Club. Right around when I was going off to college, I played club soccer at Central Michigan. My youth club got bought out by another larger youth club in the area. So it was a sad thing for all of us that went off and went to play in college because we didn't really have our youth club around anymore. So what we did was, after the first 2 years of college, when we were still in college, it was like a project. Me and all of my friends came together over the summer, and we joined a summer league, which was the first year of Livonia City FC. I actually played for another team in the league for a year, and I just kind of had the thought of, I could do better than that, like as far as organization and what they were doing. So we put it together. I still remember the first day we had our first tryout when we were trying to add a couple more players or whatever. We rented out a facility. We were extremely nervous the day before. We weren't sure if anyone was going to show up. We ended up having 50 plus people come to the first tryout, and we had so many people. We actually made in the first year, we had an A and a B team, and ever since then it's just kind of kept growing. We've added two women's teams, an A and a B women's team. We've since added, we have four men's teams, an over 30 team. We've hired coaches for the women's team and a coach for the AB team. And then the C and the D team are just kind of self-managed. We've played in U.S. Open Cup now. This is our second year. We actually have a big U.S. Open Cup match coming this weekend. We're playing in the second round against Ann Arbor FC. We've played in the U.S. Amateur Cup now for 2 years. We've traveled to regionals and won a regional title at Tournament of Champions. We've placed third at nationals 2 years ago. We've traveled to seven states. It just keeps growing, and it kind of keeps adding a little bit each year. We 2 years ago, I think, was the biggest step. We filed Livonia City Football Club as a nonprofit organization. We elected a board of directors. I'm the president. We have six other pretty qualified guys that kind of helped me with it. I think one of the things, this is a lesson for anyone starting a team, having good help is the biggest thing. I know I couldn't do it all alone. The coaches are extremely helpful that I have with me. The other board members give me plenty of lessons every single day. Somewhere along the line, as we were doing this, I started to get questions on how I started Livonia City. So I've had the desire, I guess, to get involved and start helping other teams. So I joined the MPSL board as a marketing director like 3 years back. And since I've helped Lake St. Clair get started over on the east side of Michigan, Sporting Detroit, Inner Detroit, and there's just been kind of a big growth, I guess, in Metro Detroit as far as teams are going. And myself and Mehmed with Lake St. Clair have kind of had a big part in that. So we've just kind of seen how we've just kind of seen how it's becoming really popular. We're spoiled. We have a Detroit city 20 minutes from us. We see what it can look like when it's done right. And I think that's what keeps us all hungry and keeps us all trying to grow our club, is we see it right in our own backyard. When it is successful, it can be really great.
So tell me, you talked about the structure of the club. What led you to form as a nonprofit with a board of directors? Was it to be a supporters owned or membership driven club? Like what kind of went into the thought process behind that decision?
Well, I was thinking sustainability. With that, I was thinking, well, what if I ever moved away, or I ever wasn't around anymore, and I still wanted the club to be around. So it's elected every terms are 2 years. So every 2 years, there's a reelection for each position. I was kind of thinking, if Craig isn't around, or if Fred, my vice president, or Jake, the treasurer, if someone isn't around, it's just kind of a plug and go type of thing. And the next group of people can help out with it. Helps a little bit with sponsors. It's tax deductible for them as well. They're allowed to write it off. We've been blessed to have a couple sponsors come on and help us. But it kind of just sustainability, I think, was the biggest thing. It doesn't always have to be Craig is the dictator and gets to make all the decisions. I always joke, as soon as we elected the board of directors, we had a couple badges when we were doing our rebrand, kind of taking it a bit more serious. And I actually voted for a different Livonia City FC logo, and I got outvoted like 5-2. And if I was still the only one making all the calls, we would have a completely different logo, and I don't even know what the club would look like. So I think it's good to make sure I'm not always right. And I think it's good that you kind of get fact checked sometimes by six other smart guys, and they can kind of, if I'm doing something wrong and they're seeing it and I'm not seeing it, I think it kind of helps out. We get a bunch of brains together in the room, and we come up with the best decision for the club.
Now, you guys play in the MPSL, is that correct?
That is correct.
So can you give us a little bit of overview of the league, you know, footprint geographically, you know, sanctioning, what level is it, et cetera?
Okay. Yeah. So the MPSL, the Michigan Premier Soccer League, because sometimes you'll hear it and someone thinks you're saying the NPSL. We always have to note the MPSL. It started back in the early 90s, about when I was born. The heyday of it, I think, was the early 2000s. There was a Detroit Arsenal team that won a national championship. And there's been some former MLS players that have played in the league. It's quite competitive. You're probably aware of this. Recently, they kind of restructured how USASA sanctions leagues. You can be a national sanctioned league, you can be a multi-state league, or you could be like a single state league. Prior to that, they had it, to my knowledge, it was just a two-tier. They had USASA leagues, and then they had USASA elite leagues, and it was actually on the website distinguished as there was 13 across the country that were called USASA elite leagues. The Cosmopolitan League over in New York was one that everyone was pretty popular with, but the MPSL was actually one of those 13 leagues that was a USASA elite league. So what it is now is a league of, it's a men's and women's league. We have 9 women's teams that play like one straight table. We have, I think last year, and it's constantly up and down, obviously, over 30 teams in 3 different tiers. Promotion and relegation is applied to some extent. One of the things that did frustrate us a bit was making that break into the upper group of our league. It was kind of they've been up there for a while, so they're going to be up there kind of thing. And when we did make that breakthrough, and now even though we are part of the haves and not the have-nots in the league, I still think that there's some of like the old traditional teams that just kind of sit in there and just kind of take up space when we have a lot of these new clubs coming up that want to make a name for themselves. They're ambitious with going out and recruiting. They don't just have the same players. They hold a tryout every year. And it's kind of, so far, it myself and Mehmed both being on the board for the MPSL, we've had some, I don't want to say issues, but we've had, hey, let's try it like this. Let's do something differently. They're fascinated by the fact that we were able to both make two clubs and be competitive almost overnight when they've had clubs, the White Eagles in Carpathia, that have been around since the 50s and the 60s. So there's some traditional clubs in it, and they're fascinated by the fact of, well, how did you make a team so fast? Most of them don't understand social media and what it can do for your team or your organization. So I started running, along with doing the marketing director, I started running the MPSL social media, the Twitter, Facebook, and all that. And it's helped, I think, with growth of the league over the last couple of years. But it's a USA Elite League, and it has about 30 men's teams, mostly from Metro Detroit. We almost, this past year, almost started accepting teams a little bit outside of Metro Detroit. We actually had a couple Ohio teams that were unhappy with Northern Ohio, barely. They always joke about Toledo still being a part of Michigan, because it used to be. But it was a couple of Toledo teams were a little bit unhappy with what was happening down with Ohio. So we almost started to like grow the footprint a little bit. But it's pretty much Metro Detroit. A couple of the more ambitious teams will travel. We had, I think, 4 or 5 teams join the Amateur Cup from the MPSL last year. Austin and Wayne County Sporting, one of the other new teams, are playing in the U.S. Open Cup this year. So we're constantly kind of looking at how we can grow it currently. But this kind of project that now me and Mehmet have started is, I think, the next step in the phase of Michigan soccer.
So let's talk about that. I noticed that there was a letter, kind of a petition going around. I'm familiar with those. And definitely.
Where do you think we got the idea?
Well, I was just curious as to kind of, what is the thinking behind this? And ultimately, what is the end goal? What are you trying to achieve through this campaign in terms of either making Michigan soccer better, growing Michigan soccer? Talk a little bit about what inspired the campaign, and then, what you ultimately hope to achieve with the campaign.
I think the first thing you said right there is extremely important too. The question you asked, what is the end goal? That's, I think, what we kind of all have to be thinking about. What are we trying to achieve here? So for me, it doesn't make sense necessarily, for example, like the UPSL. One gentleman is an owner of a league, and it's just a bunch of teams paying for a product of joining into his league, and takes a little bit for himself. The rest of the money gets put back into it. That doesn't make much sense to me, because what would that ever achieve if that just continued to go on? So for me, what we were trying to achieve is kind of lay a foundation for Michigan. Just like when you build a house without a strong foundation, it's going to fail every single time. So you witnessed a couple of years back, the national leagues were the choice for many. The UPSL came around, became really popular. Feels like overnight it just kind of blew up. Over 300 teams now, I believe. I don't know if they broke 400, but at least over 300 teams. The NPSL was very strong. We saw it here in Michigan. The NPSL Michigan division was arguably one of the strongest in the country. We had Detroit City. We had Grand Rapids FC getting strong attendance. They put a good product on the field. We had AFC and Arbor strong, putting a good product on the field. We had Kalamazoo FC. It was extremely strong, very impressive in our area. The PDL, we know extremely well. And for those that follow the U.S. Open Cup and the runs that the Michigan Bucks, now called the Flint City Bucks, have made recently, they won a national championship. They've obviously knocked off MLS teams in the U.S. Open Cup, which is like the pipe dream for many of the teams for entering the U.S. Open Cup. So there was a lot of success. The USL2 came to be, rebranding from the PDL. There was a lot of popularity with the national leagues. And I think what you've seen, at least in like the last 2 to 3 years, is the regional leagues have now become more popular again. You got the Gulf Coast Premier League. They're attempting, obviously, the Great Plains Premier League. I was on the phone with the commissioner of the Midwest Premier League, Cliff Conrad, yesterday. Actually, we were talking. So the regional leagues are now starting to become even more popular. I think the thought with that is kind of building a framework of this is amateur soccer. The United States has a unique challenge of being so spread out that maybe a national league doesn't exactly make sense at this level until we are able to kind of make sure it's sustainable. So I think we're just taking the extra step of building the groundwork from an even smaller footprint. We're trying to organize Michigan first. And once we have Michigan started, sure, let's go talk to the Midwest Premier League. Let's talk to a national league about working with them. That's fine. But it's never going to work unless we are able to lay a groundwork and have a strong foundation with a league that always has a feeder up to those regional or up to those national leagues. I think sustainability is something that you have to look at. The lifespan, as you're probably aware of many of these clubs, is 4 to 5 years. We're very much aware of that. We'll be entering our fifth year next year. And we're pretty pleased with the fact that we can say this past year, we turned a profit with Livonia City FC, which is something a lot of clubs can't say. So it's kind of nice to see there's some other like-minded clubs in Michigan that are kind of thinking along the same lines as us as far as being stable and stability. The UPSL did successfully in the Midwest take one team from the MPSL. The Rebels were an MPSL team, and he is going to be the new commissioner of the Midwest, or at least the Michigan Conference. I'm not exactly sure the details of it. They announced it a couple of days ago. So the regional and national leagues are definitely coming to town, and they're definitely recruiting and trying to replace that next group. And I think I kind of if you read the rant after the post yesterday, I think it's the same cycle. These teams all join a regional or national league. They do it for a couple years. It's not sustainable. And then we'll be talking about the same thing in 4 or 5 years that it wasn't sustainable. And it's kind of going to go as far as the people running it are willing to lose the money. So, or we've seen, I guess, I don't know if you saw it as well, Lansing Ignite just had their baseball owner pull out and didn't want to lose money anymore. So when you're dealing with not soccer guys, they're just kind of when they lose interest in it, you're going to lose a club overnight. So I guess that's kind of the thought process with it, is we're trying to lay a foundation before we even think about the far travel. And you're talking to someone that has been to, with our club, we've been to 7 different states and traveled. So we know more so than a lot of the other MPSL teams what that actually entails. But we know that it's not sustainable necessarily to be able to do that.
So in terms of the league, what are we looking at right now? The current geographic footprint of the MPSL, what are travel times for the clubs that are participating in the league?
Mm-hmm. So most of the teams are in Metro Detroit, and for someone that is unfamiliar with that, what exactly that means and where that is, I would say Metro Detroit from one end to one end is probably about
30 seconds. Looks like we may have lost the connection. We'll see if we can get the guys on this to get Craig back on the air in just a moment. One of the key points of this whole situation is sustainability, and it is not part of the conversation enough, in my opinion, when it comes to the decisions that are made, who plays where, who is allowed into what league, and so I think, you know, that, you know, having clubs participating in the league that they can travel with, and we're gonna see if we can get Craig back on the air. Craig, are you there?
Yes. Did the call drop?
Yeah, we dropped you for a minute. So we were talking about sustainability and travel time for the clubs in your league, and you were just about to get to the answer, and then we lost you. So what are the, you know, average travel times for clubs participating in the NPSL?
Mm-hmm. So Metro Detroit is about, from one end to one end, about an hour and a half. So if you're on the far east side of Metro Detroit, and you're traveling all over to the west of Metro Detroit, you're probably going to take about an hour and a half. So an hour and a half and less. Now, last year, the MPSL teams, luckily, we were able to partake in the Michigan Milk Cup, which was kind of a cool competition. I would encourage a lot of other states and cities to try this out. Michigan Milk Cup put USL 2 teams. It had the Bucks in it. It had UPSL teams. It had Oakland County and Carpathia and others in it. It had state level teams like Livonia City, Lake St. Clair in it. And it had NPSL teams in it, like Grand Rapids FC in Lansing in the past. So it kind of put all of these teams together. When we do those competitions, you could go to the west side of Michigan, which is about 2.5 hours over to the west side if you're going to Grand Rapids or Kalamazoo. So I would say in league travel, you're probably looking worst case scenario, hour and a half. I think most of our games, because Livonia is a little more centrally located, probably about 45 minutes for our furthest game. But that's the footprint. In addition to the MPSL being here, there's another league that is called the MUSL, the Michigan United Soccer League. They are more of a primarily like an over 30, over 40, over 55 league. They have, I want to say, 4, 5, or 6 different divisions of like over 30 soccer, extremely deep in over 30. They probably, I don't know, maybe 40 to 50 over 30 teams. They do have an open division. Our C and our D team, our fourth, third, and fourth teams, they actually play in the MUSL right now, and they compete in the open division, and their open division only has about 10, 12 teams, so it's a little bit smaller. I think kind of how this idea came to be, the Michigan Soccer League that we're trying to do, is we are trying to get all of the teams in Michigan, whether they're over 30, whether they're open, whether they are ambitious and want to travel like Livonia City, or if they just want to stay local like some of the older traditional clubs. Can we get all of these teams in the same league and can we get them all working together, and can we get them all kind of pooling their resources together? They're sanctioned all by MSA, which is Michigan Soccer Association, the Michigan Adult Soccer Association, as we refer to it. And there are 4 or 5 different Michigan leagues, 2 of which are in Metro Detroit. There's one that's a little bit more on the west side of Michigan, the Michigan Elite Soccer League, that we also want to come in. The bottom corner on the west side too of Michigan has a league called the Blossom Land Area League. I've made contact with them within the last 2 years. We're going to be reaching out to them probably later this week about like if there's any way we can work together. The Lansing group, Lansing Ignite, has kind of, there's been some frustrated fans with them, and the baseball owner again announced that they were going to pull out, or I guess he hasn't announced it. I guess a player for Lansing announced it, and they are waiting to announce it officially next week. Some of the fans are coming together, hopefully up in Lansing there, and possibly going to do a supporter-owned club. They've already made contact with us in the last 24 hours. So it's just kind of the idea of, can we pool all of our resources together and figure out a way so that we have a nice sustainable league? You look at someone like maybe the Cosmopolitan League over in New York. It's the same kind of concept. They have their open teams, which are nationally respected, with plenty of teams over there. And then when you're too old to do that, they have their over 30 and their over 40 teams that travel and play well. You look over in Maryland, you have the Christos team that has their open team, and then they have on top of that their over 30 and their over 40 teams that are almost dominant. I think you look at their over 30 or 40 record, they had like 110, 5-5 or something over like a 10-year history. So I think it's a way for people to stay involved in the sport and still play competitively when they do that. So I guess that's kind of the thought process behind it. I don't know if you saw in the rant, the bit about MSA money. Did you see anything about that?
I saw a little bit about that. Can you explain a little bit more of that?
Yeah, so MSA, the Michigan Soccer Association, every time an international Champions Cup match, those ICC matches as they're referred to, are played on Michigan soil, the Michigan Adult Soccer Association actually gets a chunk of the proceeds just for being the sanctioner of the match. So over the last couple of years, the Big House in Ann Arbor has hosted several of the matches. They had one this past year. It was Napoli and Barcelona. Me and my girlfriend went to it. Unfortunately, Messi didn't get to come though. The thought is every time they host one of those matches, they're getting a cut of the money. So I've attended, in addition to being an MPSL board meeting, I've attended an MSA board meeting, which is they're all elected officials similar to the MPSL. But they have over a $200,000 plus or surplus in their bank account, which me and Mehmet, when we went to the meeting, we were like, wow. That's incredible. They have $200,000 that is just kind of sitting in a bank account, and how that money gets spent is all of the leagues have a vote for how the money gets spent. And the last, I guess, 2 or 3 years, as it's been building up, the MUSL board votes one way and how the money gets spent. The MPSL votes one way and how the money gets spent. We have another league where our women's team started before joining the MPSL women's. It's called the Great Lakes Women's League. They have a vote on how it's spent. There's an Ann Arbor based league. They have a vote on how it's spent. And you go and you count the votes and all the teams across the state and how they want to spend it. And they've never been able to come to an agreement on how to use the money. So just the last couple of years, it's just kind of sat there and sat there and sat there. I don't want to say they don't do anything with it. We were very blessed when we did go to our Nationals trip down to Florida. The MPSL wrote us a check. The MSA wrote us a check. The USASA Region 2 wrote us a check just for going and traveling and representing all of those entities down in Florida at Nationals. So we saw that and how they're able to help fund it. But I kind of think if you make it known and you make an announcement and you're saying whoever wins the MPSL is going to win this prize money or they're going to go do this, I just think that just kind of adds interest to the sport, and it kind of adds you have a group of friends that plays soccer locally and you guys think you're a good team. Okay, well, let's go and prove it at the state level. And then if we can prove it at the state level, then let's go travel regionally and then let's go travel nationally and kind of see where we stand with it. I think that kind of that competitive energy kind of would invoke a lot more teams to come around. So I think that's the thought process with it is, yes, the money's there. How are we spending it? Can we do this efficiently, and can we get all of the leagues, teams, organizations in Michigan all to work together and kind of agree and see how we can use that money to help all of the clubs in the state the best?
In terms of the MPSL as a league, what is the long term goal for the league? Is it to remain an elite level state geographically boundaried league, or is it to become a league like GCPL and expand its footprint beyond the state of Michigan? Are there any kind of conversations internally that you're able to talk about publicly in regards to the long-term ambitions and goals of the MPSL?
Mm-hmm. Well, we got into, I guess, a bit of a debate this past year when I told you earlier in the conversation, we had a couple Toledo, some Northern Ohio teams that were interested in joining. And it invoked a discussion in one of the board meetings of, well, what are we doing here? We're called the Michigan Premier Soccer League, and then we're going to start allowing Ohio teams into the league. I'll tell you my vote personally. I voted yes to allow them in. I was like, yeah, if they're ambitious enough and they're willing to make the travel, I think that just kind of grows our footprint of the league. Some people felt that way. Some people felt the other way of we should just stick to what we're doing. I kind of made the counterpoint to Toledo is closer in proximity to West Michigan, and West Michigan, doesn't even have any teams in our league right now. It's called the MPSL, the Michigan Premier Soccer League, but I kind of just feel it's the Metro Detroit area soccer league, because we don't really have at this time any West Michigan teams in it. So I guess the million-dollar question is, as far as in the state, is what are we trying to do here with them restructuring the sanctioning and not distinguishing the difference between a strong state level and a weaker state level league. All of the state level leagues right now are considered just USASA state leagues. So I don't know necessarily that we've been further enough along in discussions with the MPSL to necessarily think, hey, we're going to try and grow our footprint to become a regional league. I definitely think there's some of the old traditional clubs that do not want to make the travel to Ohio or Indiana or Chicago or go and do that. So I don't think there would be enough of I don't think the votes would be there as far as amongst the league to ever grow the footprint outside of Michigan. I think it is a step. But I think, again, the first step for me and for some of us like-minded thinkers here in Michigan, it's how can we make a Michigan First League and grow that? And hey, if you win the Michigan League for a year or two and you're pretty dominant, and the MSA is helping fund it because they're paying the team that wins, or the top two or top three teams that win every couple of years, you look after a couple of years of playing well in Michigan, you got a healthy bank account, you're stable, you can make that commitment. Maybe because you had a Livonia play against Lake St. Clair and you have a little bit of a following in the state, you get a little bit of fans at your match and you're able to make it sustainable before you make that leap up. I think one other idea that I find necessary is the state organizations, the MSA, to come to a agreement or an understanding with those ambitious teams that want to travel regionally or nationally in a bigger league. I think what happens is, at least with MSA, the second that a team defines that it's leaving for the regional or the national league, they kind of feel a bit disrespected or a bit annoyed with the fact that they're leaving the Michigan-based league, as opposed to maybe getting that support from that organization. I think it'd be something to be said if the NPSL or the UPSL or the Midwest Premier League that's coming to town, if any of those organizations took the extra step of vetting with the state organizations. I think that could help strengthen relationships across the board, just because maybe the MSA is able to, I know Detroit City doesn't need any extra funding, but maybe Detroit City is able to, or sorry, Grand Rapids or Lansing or any of these teams are able to get additional state funding as they're traveling regionally or nationally. And it wouldn't be such a burden on the club necessarily, because they're doing first, they're representing Michigan. Second, they're representing their club, and they're able to do so because the league, the bigger entity, did the extra step of working with the state organizations. And I think that would be the next stage after kind of sorting out the Michigan landscape, is finding a regional league or a national league that wants to work with MSA and we're comfortable working with them. And then that's the type of league that we could try to work maybe a little bit of promotion relegation. We take the top MSL league take them and put them into a regional league. But that league has worked with the state organizations in the area, and they're still kind of having that relationship, and it doesn't get broken down at that time.
Yeah, I mean, I think that level of cooperation is where we have to go to grow the game properly in this country, what you just described. I want to get back to something you said earlier in our conversation when you were talking about specifically Livonia City FC. You said that last year in your fourth season, you were able to achieve profitability. Where did you find, what were your revenue sources get to a place where you could achieve profitability?
Mm-hmm. So couple different areas. First, the players for all of the teams pay a amount of dues. Every player for the team pays, last year we did $220. And they paid it to Livonia City FC, the nonprofit. All of the money paid to us is tax deductible. So when they pay us the $220, every member is able to write it off on their taxes. So that was our base. We were able to get sponsors this year as well, which helped fund it. We've done jersey sales. Our bigger matches, the U.S. Open Cup matches, we've been able to cover costs by selling tickets. We last year got knocked out in the third round of the U.S. Open Cup qualifying by St. Louis. We were able to have about 150, maybe 200 people at the match. We did $5 ticket admission. That was the, I think, second time we ever sold tickets to the match. We did, we had these really radical, pink jerseys, and, they were kind of, they kind of had a little bit of a cult following, at least locally. Everybody was, kind of getting those. So we sold maybe, I think 50 to 60 of those, like resale to, a bunch of just people that reached out to us and thought the jersey looked cool. Definitely, I think, the club dues are something that is a, it's a, for us, it was a necessary thing. But it's something that we're looking, if we ever did make that leap of doing a semi-pro team at the next level, I think it's something that would need to be eliminated, because you are, you're forced kind of to make talent-based decisions. We've had great success with guys buying into it. I think as long as you're straightforward with, we use this money for field rental, we use this money for refs, this is what we're doing, this is what we're saving. All of our members of Livonia City kind of get these updated. This is what we're doing. This is where we're at. This is what where we want to go. So it's kind of like they've all just kind of bought into the club. And keep in mind too, we have 4 men's teams, an over 30 team, and 2 women's teams. When you have that many teams and they're paying dues, you're going to start to slowly generate a little bit of income. I think after we are ready and we make that step of having the semi-pro team, we wouldn't plan to charge the semi-pro team players, anyone on that roster, we wouldn't charge them dues. So we would still have our adult program that would still be paying dues, that would be a kind of a feeder to it. And then the ones that are extremely ambitious with it and want to make that next step in their playing careers and want to travel every weekend and do all those things, those players and that team, or that we'd like to have a men's and a women's both. Those two teams would be able to, I guess, operate more along the lines of like a semi-pro organization. But I think early on, sustainability was always number one for us. Me and the vice president threw some money early on into it, but we realized at some point it wasn't going to be sustainable until we kind of figured out a business model that worked for us. So for us, it was charging a little bit at the start of the year, and we are pretty upfront about it. Hey guys, there are definitely some teams in the MPSL or in others that you could go and play for free. This is what Livonia City is about. This is what we do. This is where we've been. This is where we want to go. And we are always pleasantly surprised every year when a player will choose to come to Livonia City and pay to play, as opposed to going to one of the teams for free, because we have a vision with it and where we want to take it. So I kind of look at it, and so do a couple of the other guys on the board, is they're all investing in the club and they're all buying into it. A lot of the guys on the second and third team or the fourth team, they will come and watch the first team play, and they're very supportive of it. That's how we got the 200 plus people to one of our U.S. Open Cup matches. So I think everyone's kind of, as our first team has continued to grow on the field, and some of the guys fall behind in playing, and they're on the second and they're on the third team, and guys get jobs and they move out of the state and they still follow up on the club. I think that's kind of how our following is growing that way, is the guys played at the high level with the first team, then they've fallen behind. And then I kind of equate that to how Christos operates, is they've just done it a lot longer than us, is they had their first team that started it. They all since graduated the over 30 and over 40, and then the next generation came in, but yet they still have that over 30 and that over 40 group that is kind of supporting them and kind of running it. So I think we're just many years behind them, but hopefully we're going along the right path.
Well, where can people find some more information about your project in terms of the letter, as well as you specifically with Livonia City FC? Maybe they want to reach out, get some information, you know, pick your brain, get some ideas. How can they connect with you online, social media, whatever?
Mm-hmm. You can follow us at Livonia City FC on Twitter. Or you can reach out to us at LivoniaCityFC@gmail.com. We set up an email for the Michigan Soccer League, MichiganSoccerLeague@gmail.com. If you are more interested in the project at hand, feel free to reach out to us through Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. We have all the following for Livonia City. We're always listening to new ideas. We're always looking for more. I always say we're looking for great people, not just great soccer players, to be a part of the club. And every couple of years we have someone come along that wants to work with us and kind of help build it and bring a new idea to it. So we're always looking for new ideas.
Well, Craig, thanks for joining the show. We look forward to having you back on again soon to talk some more of this. It was it's really fascinating. Best of luck to you, and hopefully others will come together and find a path forward together, because I think that in the long run is the best thing for Michigan soccer. It's the best thing for American soccer, quite frankly. So good luck with all the work and the efforts. We really appreciate you spending some time with us today.
Thanks for having me on.
Thank you. That is Craig Beebe. He is with Livonia City FC and the MPSL. We'll be right back after this.
No one, no man, no woman, no child should ever have to drink green water with bugs, with algae, with disease in it. Bad water and a lack of toilets kills more people than all the wars in the world. We know how to bring clean drinking water right now to every single person on earth. And when you can bring water into communities, it truly transforms them. It changes everything. Now you could know that you'd made a difference. You could know that you had truly impacted the life of a family, of a community, of a region. There was either clean water or there wasn't. We believe in a world where every single person has clean and safe water to drink, and we will continue fighting until that happens.
Thanks for watching today. Thanks for tuning in. As always, getting back to what we were talking about at the very top of the show, the U.S. men's national team is going nowhere fast. And for anyone saying that the U.S. is in crisis following this defeat, they were in crisis long before this. This is one of those iceberg moments. You might see the little tip of the iceberg at the top of the water, but there's been trouble here for a long, long time. And Berhalter giving this spin afterwards that the U.S. men's national team just simply lacked desire. Yeah, that was one thing they lacked amongst many other things, including any sense of a plan, a tactic, etc., to be successful. And that is all on the coach, period. Plain and simple. And those who are making the decisions on who is the coach of the national team. We have to be better. We could be better. We should be better. And it's time for the Federation to take it seriously and do something about it. Thanks for watching today. You can always watch on Facebook.com/WRKMN or at DanielWorkman.com. Catch me on Twitter or Instagram @DanielWorkman. We'll see everyone again tomorrow.